Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's national anthem will be offered by award-winning Nashville recording artist, Ricochet.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled
some little quirks. I don't know that they own up to all of them.
Five wide. There's one outside. Good. Good. Keep shoving. Keep shoving. I don't know where you're at.
I think I'll go home and slam my head in the door. Repeatedly.
Don't do that like I'm mad at last night, remember?
Two minutes after 8 o'clock here on the East Coast, it's Race Talk Live. I'm Steve Conley, and over there coughing in the corner is Mike Reed. Welcome to it. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. Mike, first off, how are you doing tonight? I know you've kind of had a busy week. What's going on in your life before I climb up on my soapbox?
Oh, you know, just making some changes in my life. Got a new job, so hoping to make that up in bigger and better places. And, you know, we're here now off a just an amazing, I thought was just unexpected finish on Sunday. So we do have a lot to talk about, a lot of unexpecteds. But first, the soapbox. Stephen, to you.
And you're right. We'll get to this great, exciting finish from Richmond. But the big thing this week has been NASCAR and Tony Stewart. We've been talking about this basically for 2 weeks now. And we all know how it started. Stewart makes his announcement that he's coming back, races at Richmond, but he calls out NASCAR on the whole lug nut issue. And there's been the debate since NASCAR said, hey, look, you don't have to have all the lug nuts tight on the car. And then teams got to the point where they're not even putting all the lugs on. Well, one of the things that Tony said, and I think a lot of people are forgetting this, and I'm going back to a USA Today article that has the direct quote from Stewart. This is what I think started. A lot of people are like, well, why did he get fined? He just called out. He did the same thing Dale Earnhardt Jr. did the same thing Greg Biffle did, and a lot of other drivers in regards to this lug nut. No, this is where we need to put a little clarification. Tony called out NASCAR on the lug nut rule, but he added something, and it's the way that he said it. And Brian France even said it was what Tony said that got this penalty. And here's the direct quote before I get into the rest of my soapbox. He said, with all the crap we're going through with all the safety stuff, and for them to sit there and sit on their hands on this one, this is not a game you play with safety. And that's exactly the way I feel like NASCAR is treating this. This is not the way you do it. Basically what Tony Stewart said in a nutshell is NASCAR doesn't care about safety. And that is the way NASCAR looked at this, that Stewart was calling out the organization that has put work hours after hours and millions of dollars into making this sport safer. For a driver and an owner to say that NASCAR does not care about safety and they don't care until somebody gets hurt is a major, major issue. So we know that NASCAR made the change in regards to the lug nut. Now all the teams, they have to have five lugs on there, and at the end of the race, they're going to torque them, and they're going to test them to make sure that they are tight. And if they're not, it's going to be a fine, and we're going to see crew chiefs get suspended. So the question is, why did NASCAR continue to leave the fine on Tony Stewart? A lot of people say, well, they changed the rule, so they should pull the fine. No, they should not. NASCAR is doing exactly what they needed to do. This had to be a statement. $35,000. We saw that the Drivers' Council offered to pay Stewart's fine, and he was going to take the $35,000 and donate it to a charity in Delaware for autism. So $35,000, we sit here, that kind of number, we're like, that's a lot of money. Not to these drivers. They have that kind of money set up. This $35,000 had to be a message to the rest of the teams, rest of the drivers, rest of the owners. Look, you want to criticize the sport, go ahead and do it. But don't question the integrity. This sport loses its integrity. It loses, it has nothing else. You cannot sit there and allow somebody to question the integrity of this sport and something that they have worked so hard to do it. Brian France came on and said, look, we made the changes. The drivers were right. This was a rule that needed to be changed, but the fine has to stay in place. Whether or not they left, they made these rule changes, they fined Tony Stewart because of how he said it, and he questioned the integrity. If you are saying that that fine should be lifted, you are saying that it is okay for a driver to question the integrity of this sport. Without the integrity, we've got nothing else. Soapbox clear.
Well, and I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to contradict what you said, Brian France said. It's not what he said, it's how he said it. Anytime someone has called NASCAR out and, you know, said something bad about them, they've been fined. That's why I don't have a problem with Stewart still being fined. And like you said, 35 grand is nothing compared to what these drivers usually get. Matter of fact, they usually set aside $500 million in these situations. They do get fined, which we all know Tony doesn't care what you think about what he says. He's going to say it either way. But on one hand, I do agree with Stewart, because a company that is so big on safety with the Hans device, with all the features in and outside of the car to make the racing safer, for them to overlook something that is so obvious and being made so obvious, I do have a problem with that, you know. And we're going back to that I think they've actually made it even stricter than it was before as far as the lug nuts go.
Yes.
So we'll see how that policing goes. But... You know what? And I'm just going to call it now. I bet you we see a lot more penalties just because of people with the advancements we have in pit road with the cameras. And, you know, we have cameras now on some of the pit crew members' helmets. So I'd almost bet you NASCAR has connections into those. You know, I expect a lot more pretty significant rise in pit penalties as far as missing lug nuts, and the torque thing is going to be huge. JGR better be worried. I'm almost wondering, with as quick as their stops are, I wonder if they're going to be one of the heaviest fined.
I would say it's a good possibility. And I was trying to get a member of a pit crew on here tonight, but it was just the timing didn't work out so well. But one of the things we've got to remember is that I think when NASCAR put this in place, when they did this because they were taking the officials off of pit road, and the officials were the ones that were monitoring tight lug nuts if all five were on. I think they did this so that they could take the officials off there, and that in itself was a safety decision. Fewer people on pit road. That's 40. Well, at the time, it was 43 people less until they changed it. So 40 fewer people on pit road. All right. So you're making a safety decision. I think NASCAR, it's not very often they overlook what these teams can and will do. When NASCAR gave them an inch, and they do this all the time, they give them an inch, and the teams take that extra 2 miles. That is exactly what these teams did. They basically stepped up and said, all right, you're going to allow us to not have to worry about having all five. Well, we found out if we just only put four on there, it's going to save us a tenth or two. And we've heard how much a tenth of a second or two tenths of a second on pit road, how big that is. That's huge on the racetrack. And especially if you're a driver in that first pit box, it's enormous. So I think NASCAR looked at this and said, okay, well, five lug nuts, they've got to be on there. We see drivers have four lug nuts, and all of a sudden they're talking about a vibration coming down pit road because they missed a lug. So they figure, all right, well, they're not going to have that much of a problem. It's going to police themselves. I don't think NASCAR ever expected the teams to go to a point where they were just like, look, we're not even going to put that fifth one on the wheel, and we're just going to skip it altogether. So I think this is just a scenario of NASCAR giving the teams an opportunity, and this is one of those reasons that we have to have a rule book that is so tight. We have to have rules that are extremely tight, that are measured with lasers, and why the fines are so significant. And I think that's one of the reasons that this fine is also becoming significant. If they test those lug nuts at the end of a race and you're missing one or you've got one loose, you expect to lose your crew chief. And I don't want to be a tire changer on pit road costing a crew chief to stay at home. So I think all this week before we even get to Talladega, there's a lot of pit crews that are training extremely hard, making sure they're hitting all five lugs. Now, how NASCAR is going to actually monitor it during the race, I'm not sure, because they're not going to put the officials back out there. They have the cameras, but that only monitors one side. And where have we seen these lug nuts missing? Not on the right side, on the left side. So I think that's going to be one of the scenarios. Maybe they put, and I'm getting a comment from the kitchen behind me, is maybe they put a camera on the wall. Maybe they put one on the pit box, and they put more of them on the tire changers. So you've got the guys out there with cameras already. That's a lot of extra cameras, but is that the way NASCAR wants to go? So that is definitely something. And like I said, I agree with NASCAR in leaving this fine because it's proving a point. Look, these drivers have plenty of time to go into the hauler, to sit down with NASCAR, and behind closed doors, they can question the integrity of the sport all they want. They can say Brian France is, well, yeah, okay,
careful,
to keep it clean, a cuckoo
head.
Yeah, I don't want to get fined here either. But if you want to call Brian France out and you want to do it behind closed doors, so be it. And Brian even said that these drivers had plenty of time to come to them, whether they come to the offices in Charlotte or Daytona, or whether they just show up at the hauler at the track. They have that open door policy, and every driver knows it. Tony Stewart said he's not going to change. And I think he said it best. This is a $35,000 fine that he has no problem paying. This is worth that price to keep the driver safe. And I think that's another reason. You want to voice up, expect to pay the fine. Is it going to be worth it? And Tony Stewart basically just said, this is worth it because of what happened. So you get the rules changed, but the fine sticks in place because you criticized the integrity of the sport in the public. And I think that's one of the biggest issues. And I basically say kudos to both NASCAR and Tony Stewart, both of them standing their ground and saying, look, this is how it is. We run the sport. You abide by the rules. You know what they are. You want to voice off? Pay the price. And I think some of them are willing to do that.
Well, and you know what? And to Tony's credit, I think he really does believe you're not going to get NASCAR's attention unless, A, you're in front of a camera, and, B, you really call them out on something. I mean, if Tony had just said, you know, I think you guys need to look into, you know, these lug nut issues, I don't know if NASCAR would have taken them seriously. You know, part of me thinks that's exactly why Tony is and does the what Tony does.
I would say that's an absolutely great point. It's because, look, like a lot of fans have said, you've had several other drivers call the sport out and saying, hey, I don't like the fact that we're leaving lug nuts loose. I don't want to hit the wall. Your most popular driver said it. And his exact quote, I've lost it here. I hate the idea of not having lugs tight on my car. That's a pretty strong statement. But at the same point in time, just saying it like that, I think NASCAR was looking at it like, look, you don't like it. You're the driver. Make your team put the lugs on there. And that's been one of the arguments with Stewart of coming out and saying this. Well, look, you're the owner of the team. You tell your team to put 5 lug nuts on the car. But it's a competition disadvantage. It is an absolute disadvantage. You're buckling down 5 lug nuts on your car or 20 lug nuts, and your competitors are beating you off pit road by a second and a half, 2 seconds, because they're only putting 16 lug nuts on. So it's definitely a disadvantage, and you have to look at the competition standpoint. And I think that's one of the other things that Stewart was looking at. Look, we don't want to get beat. The competition is there. Let us fight the competition on pit road. Everything is equal.
Well, and not just that. I think it's, you know, the safety aspect again. You're not the only one on that track. Your team is not the only team on that track. If I'm with Roush and RCR is only putting 3 lug nuts on, I have to be worried about their wheel breaking off or something like that. That's a safety aspect as well.
Right. And, I mean, we've seen it before. We have seen an entire wheel separate from the center part of the hub, all 5 lug nuts still be tightened onto the hub, but the wheel broke off because you had a loose lug or two early, and it was starting to break things. It was starting to wear out parts of the wheel. So you have those issues. We've seen, and I saw it personally. Do you remember Brian Vickers from 2011 when he crashed in turn one at Charlotte, and that wheel went bouncing down the banking and leaped over a fence and landed on somebody's tent? I was sitting in turn one. Me and my wife were sitting there watching that race, and all of a sudden, here's a tire go bounding off the catch fence back across the track. And remember what it did to David Gilliland's car. That front end of that car was destroyed because he hit that tire and sent it up into the air and up over the infield fence and landed on a fan's tent. That is a dangerous situation. A loose wheel is a very dangerous situation, and we cannot have that. And I think, again, it goes back to the safety point, and that's where Tony Stewart was right. He knew the safety aspect. He knew what could happen, but at the same point in time, these teams have to be competitive, and they have to be competitive against what the other teams are doing. So I think it was literally a catch-22 in NASCAR. They made a bad decision at the start of the year making this rule and putting it in place, and I'm glad that they've made the turnaround. One of the things I still wish would happen is Brian France or Mike Helton or anybody up at the upper level of NASCAR come out and say, look, this was a mistake to start with. But you're never going to hear NASCAR say it was a mistake. They made a decision. They're going to stand by making that decision. They're going to make the changes.
I think we can both say that we know that. As long as they make the change, I can let that part go, but you're not gonna hear them say, "Oops, I'm sorry, my bad."
Nope, absolutely not. But now off of lug nuts and tires and Tony and NASCAR, we did have a heck of a race at Richmond. Now the Xfinity race, that also had a fairly interesting ending. I was kind of surprised. Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson battling for the lead and not able to hang on, actually not close out the deal. And in the final couple laps, a pass for the lead in the Xfinity race, and then a bump and run in the Sprint Cup race. Now, I'll get back to the Xfinity part here in just a minute, but there's been some discussions this week in regards to that bump and run. Is it appropriate for a teammate to do the bump and run on his own teammate, as Carl did to Kyle? Is it appropriate? Is it right to do? Or should that be something that teammates are like, no, that's taboo?
Oh, boy. You know, yes. Especially in this situation. Oh, wait. Kyle does have a win, right? I'm not just delirious right now. He does actually have a win to his credit, right?
Yeah. Yes, both Kyle and Carl are now locked in the chase.
Okay. That situation right there tells me, yeah, those guys can rough each other up because, yeah, they might get wrecked out, but they're not going to lose anything until chase time really comes around. In the chase, I tell both guys to, hey, chill out. Don't bump each other unless it's like round three on the last lap. But no, I'm not going to say I have a problem with it. I'd be all for it. I would gladly move my teammate for a win. And I think that's old school still at its best. Nobody wrecked out. And yeah, I think Carl was kind of right. Kyle did seem to be kind of baiting a little the throttle as far as how hard he was pushing it. But yeah, I have no problem with it whatsoever. I thought it made that finish just amazing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And seeing that's one of the things, because overall the race was not bad. There were times where we saw 3 and 4 wide racing at Richmond. And this reminded me of the style of racing back several years ago when they used to seal the track and the grip was just through the roof and you could go up there and you could run 3 and 4 wide. It was unbelievable racing lap after lap. But we saw, and I'm going to go ahead and say it right now, I'm not a big fan of daytime racing at short tracks. I'll tell you what, my opinion changed very quickly after Richmond. Because with the temperature change, the difference, a warmer day, a warmer track, a lot of slipping and sliding. Kudos to Goodyear because they brought a phenomenal tire. All the drivers said it. The team said this was absolutely the perfect tire for Richmond. It wore just right. It lasted a full run before it really started to show signs of major wear. But it would give you that grip throughout the run. But it fell off. And it fell off quickly. We saw a second and a half to almost 2 second difference from just getting those Goodyears bolted on to 15 laps after a run. 15 laps into a run and they were down 2 seconds from the green flag speed. So that was incredible fall off, and the way these guys raced was just spectacular. So it was good to see that style of racing at Richmond. And maybe it's because we hadn't seen a lot of daytime racing at that action track, but we definitely saw a lot of action. And like I said, kudos to Goodyear, the teams, NASCAR. And it was a great race at Richmond. I was really not expecting to see what we saw. And the ending definitely made up for it. Now, my opinion on bumping a teammate on the last lap, we've heard it before. Coming to the checkered flag, there are no teammates. The only rule that stands, and we've heard Joe Gibbs say it, we've heard Rick Hendrick say it, Richard Childress, all the owners. You bump, you bang, you fight for that win, just don't wreck my race cars. Carl Edwards and Kyle Busch did exactly that. They raced as hard as could be. Carl made the decision to drive it in there. And we've heard, I don't know if you remember the old saying, drive it in till you see God. And I think Carl drove a couple miles past heaven in turn one, because he closed up, I think, 5 car lengths on Kyle Busch just entering that corner. And how he got it to stick at the bottom of the racetrack is beyond me, and to keep that distance. You remember Carl at Kansas a couple of years ago when he bounced it off the turn 3 wall chasing Jimmy Johnson and saying, hey, I tried it. It worked in a video game one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty much what I was thinking of there at Richmond, because he drove that so far into that corner, there's no way that race car should have stuck. And it did. It gave us a great ending, and he stuck it there into turn 3. And I don't know, I would like to see the telemetry, and I wish I would have been watching it on my NASCAR app. But it definitely seemed Kyle like was a little bit more hesitant about getting into turn 3 than he had been all day. I don't know if he just thought, well, he gave it his best shot in turn 1. He's got nothing in turn 3. I've just got to coast it through here. So, but if you're the leader going into the final set of corners at any race and the checkered flag's in the air and you're not expecting a bump, you probably should get yourself out of that race car because you have a serious mental illness. Whether it's your teammate or if it's your most mortal enemy, you should be expecting a bump in that corner. And if you don't do it, I say the same thing. Get yourself out of that race car. You want that win, then you do what it takes to get through. Just don't wreck the race cars. You give them a little shove, you bump them up the track, off you go, and you're talking about one of the best finishes. Unfortunately, somebody's going to be on the short end of the stick, This week it was Kyle Busch. And I would not be surprised to see that favor returned at some point in time. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it returned this week, because Carl Edwards is going to need drafting help. And he doesn't get it from a teammate, he could be in trouble. And I don't think Kyle's going to be his best drafting mate this weekend down there in Alabama.
Well, and fortunately, he's got three other people I think he can rely on to push him. And, you know, two of them finishing 1 and 2 at Daytona earlier this year. So I'm not overly concerned about that. I do have to wonder what Kyle's mindset is. Just, you know, he was not thrilled about that move. I really don't even think he expected it. But the way he's kind of been the last, two weeks, where he's been almost right there at the win, whether it's this series or the Xfinity series, it seems like it's starting to actually get to him. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Well, I was kind of thinking the same thing. I mean, we saw that at Bristol. He was not happy about losing that race, and nor should he be. Any driver that's actually happy about losing a race and finishing second or third, again, get out of the race car. You should be upset, and that's one of the things that I give credit for Kyle Busch fans. They stand up. They're like, look, I don't want my driver to lose. And if he loses, I'm upset. He should be upset. I think that's one of the best. Go ahead.
I was just saying, speaking of being upset, as soon as I saw it, I texted you. Something I never really thought about was how racing affects the wives. Samantha Busch's expression was just priceless. You would have thought she was inside the car punching the steering wheel. She was upset. She could not believe that just happened.
You're right.
Her reaction was awesome.
Yeah, and that's another thing I wanted to talk about, because like you said, we actually texted back and forth about this for a couple minutes. There were a lot of people who are like, oh my God. And I mean, Sam got called out on Facebook and Twitter because she said the S word. I can't say it on the air, but you know what I'm talking about. Yes, poo-poo. And not a platter from a Chinese restaurant. But she said it. You could read her lips. You could almost hear it. And people just went off the handle because she said it. They're like, oh, you're supposed to be more professional. No, she's not the driver. She's not the owner. She has nothing to do with that race team. She's the wife. And you're right. She was upset. And I loved it. That kind of emotion is something that you don't see from a lot of people, whether it's drivers, whether it's teams, whether it's spouses. You definitely don't see it from a lot of wives. You wouldn't have seen that kind of anger from Ingrid Vandenbosch last year when Jeff finished second in a race. She wasn't upset at Homestead when he lost the championship. But I love that emotion out of Samantha Busch. She is into it 110%. She came from a racing family, so she was not unfamiliar with what she was getting into before she married Kyle. So that is something I think it was great to see. And Fox knew it. They knew what kind of response they were going to get from Sam. And that's the reason that they had her on camera there at the end of the race. And they do it a lot of times when Kyle's out there leading. So it was something, I think that was as fun as the end of the race itself.
And what you said right there, be more professional. There is nothing, I don't know what is more professional than reacting in that way in the heat of the moment. I mean, if you're not in there for part of the emotion, I don't know why you're in there. And I'm going to call some people out here in a minute. You see this more often in, like, the UK, in British, whatever you want to call them, because they're just so not emotional about anything. You know what? We're American. We're red-blooded. We get upset when we lose. We're happy when we win. You know what? I'm a Blues fan, and to watch us beat the Blackhawks out of that series was just phenomenal. And I know every Blackhawks player, I know we're talking hockey right now, but I know every Blackhawks player and fan had to be just ticked off.
Right. A friend of mine, yeah, and it's a great example. I have a friend of mine. He's a huge Blackhawks fan. I mean, he loves them. I think he has mental issues because he's a Yankees fan too, but hey, we'll leave that for another time. Anyways, he posted after the loss. He was like, that sucks. I hate that they lost. But he was just all cool about it. I'm like, dude, your team just blew it. They were in the lead. They lost a chance, and they blew a game where they were leading and had a chance to close it out in a game seven. And you're okay with that? He's like, no big deal. He's like, we'll be back next year. No, that's not the kind of fan I want. And it came from the corner of the couch, and I should have my wife on here more often. Actually, she should probably write most of my stuff. But she said in regards to Samantha Bush, that's Kyle's number one fan. Fan stands for fanatic. You're not out there just to be, oh, yay, golf clap. No, I don't. I like scenes out of Happy Gilmore where the fans are running up and down the sides. They're cheering. They're screaming, making noise. That is Samantha Bush. That is a passionate fan. And I know passion in this sport is overused sometimes. But I don't see many other sports that have the passion of the fan base that NASCAR has. There are times that they go overboard. And I see it all the time on blog posts, in chat rooms, in social media pages. Fans tend to go overboard. That's what they do. But to call a wife out because she was being a fan of her husband is absolutely absurd. And if you were one of those race fans, and I'm calling you out, if you got upset because Samantha said something and she wasn't on mic, she was just on camera, you need to back away and take a vacation. Because there is no reason for it. I mean, I saw some of the posts to Samantha, and it was it was offensive. It was flat out offensive. And there's no reason for it. You want to be upset? Fine. But don't be a freaking pansy. And that is exactly what some of the people did when they went overboard with this. You should enjoy what you saw. You saw a great finish to an outstanding race, and you saw a wife that just hated the fact that she lost. You want to make jokes about that she lost a paycheck so she couldn't go shoe shopping? Fine. Don't call her out because she said something that you read her lips on camera.
Hold up. Second place still pays pretty good. I'm pretty sure she could buy a nice pair of shoes with that. So I'm just saying. Come on.
All right, you got a good point. So, she couldn't get 20 pairs of shoes. She got 19. But I think she's... I think she's probably doing all right for herself, but enjoy what you saw. You don't get this emotion out of a lot of other sports, but we've got to get moving on here. We've got Talladega coming up this weekend. Got to talk about that. Got to talk about drafting. Got to talk about the big one. Or do we? We'll get to that here in just a few seconds. Goodyear was doing some testing at Indianapolis today. So we got some sound bites here. Tony Stewart, in his final test, this will be the last time that he's in a car during a test, and he said he was happy to be at Indianapolis doing this. Take a listen.
I'm actually having fun up here. I mean, this is my last tire test as a driver, so I've been having fun working with the Goodyear guys, and you know, it's been kind of fun because three of the main guys that were here when I started are here at this test, which they don't always get to come to the same test together, so... kind of nice to be working with them one last time, but it's nice to be home. And you know, I think any time that we've ever had an opportunity to go test here, I always jumped on it. I don't like to go test, it's boring to me, but I've always liked any chance I got to come up to Indy and test. That's something I always wanted to do.
Has being here made you think about the Brickyard 400, your last time here? Have you reminisced at all yet?
No, not yet. I mean, it's probably more just fresh on my mind of being back in the car, and you know, I haven't driven with this low downforce package other than just Richmond last weekend, which you aren't going to really see a big effect of it. But you know, being here and seeing how much different it feels, it's it's fun to kind of get acclimated again, and that's the big thing that I wanted to leave here with, was just feeling like that I was kind of up to speed on what the aero package was and knowing what it feels like.
There's something that he said interesting, and I haven't really thought about this, is that the fact that he hasn't had the chance to understand what this new aero package is doing. And so to be out there, get an idea at his home track at Indianapolis, where he's won before, where he said that is the biggest win of his career when he won in Indianapolis. So up there getting some really good information, and the weather in Indianapolis, it was a little cooler than what it's probably going to be when they come back to race the Brickyard. As far as sunshine, it was a beautiful day in Indy. So it's going to give them, I think, a pretty close idea of what they have to have when they come back. So that's not something that we get at a lot of tire tests. So that's something big for Tony. It'll be interesting to see moving on, because he had a lot of fun, but when he gets into later races and he's still running 18th, 19th, 20th, is he still going to be having fun? Or is he going to be like, all right, well, this aero package is a real struggle. I don't have the handle on it. So is that going to hinder the second half of his year?
I'm going to say no. You know, obviously Talladega's not, we're not going to be able to tell that yet for sure, or really anything, because the aero package is going to be completely different. But I'll go ahead and tell you now, when we get to Indy, I'm picking Tony, and I will fight you for it. but what we saw at Richmond, I know he finished 19th. He was on the lead lap. You know, I think he would have possibly finished even better than that, possibly just outside the top 10, if he had not been put a lap down early on. But I like the whip I'm seeing from Tony. You know, no, he doesn't like tire tests, and we've heard him berate Goodyear before, and you know, time and time again. But I love his attitude. He's having fun. He's enjoying his last year. Yeah, it didn't start the way he wanted it to, but he's back in the car and he's happy again. So I don't have a problem with that. And I'm hoping he does get a win, maybe even at the Brickyard. That's kind of my – I know Richmond is his favorite track, but Brickyard is kind of my Tony track. That's what I think of when I think of him, is his wins at Brickyard. The one thing I have not heard yet, and not to deviate into another huge subject, but he's back now. And I've still not heard the question or the answer to, is he going to be allowed to get in the chase?
It's funny you mentioned that. And the question is, yes. As soon as he was announced that he was coming back, NASCAR actually made that announcement that same day, that he does get the medical waiver. He is eligible for the chase. And now, here's a little side note to that story, and I was going to go right to Carl, because we've got some sound from Carl Edwards out there at Indianapolis testing as well. But since you brought this up, I'll get to Carl in a minute. Hold on there, Winter. You get your seat here in just a second. A little bit of a nugget that came out today, ESPN broke this news, that Tony doesn't plan on finishing the race at Talladega this weekend. Ty Dillon's going to get in the car probably after the first caution or the first pit stop. So Smoke's getting out of the car. He doesn't want to run Talladega. NASCAR has said if Ty Dillon goes on to win that race, that will qualify Tony for the chase. This has a lot of people up in arms, because it's supposed to be just like Kyle Busch last year. If you come back, you get inside of the top 30, you win a race, you're qualified. Now, I know how the rules are, that if you get out of the car, you start the race, you get out, a relief driver goes in, you get those points. Fine, that's great. But allowing a driver to get qualified for the chase on a medical exemption because he got out a little bit out of the – he started it and then got out of the car, I don't agree with. I think that is something that you have to win the race. Starting the car doesn't mean you win the race. Starting the car means you qualified for that race to get the points. We saw it at I believe the race was in Milwaukee in 2009, and I think it was in regards to Carl Edwards. Whoever the driver was, the starting driver was late for the race, so they had to have a backup. And the backup started that race, won the race, and it affected the points, and it affected the championship. So I'm really, and I haven't heard anything from NASCAR on saying why they are doing this, other than the fact that NASCAR spokesman confirmed Tuesday that according to the interpretation of its chase of the Sprint Cup Series eligibility rules, if a relief driver is first to cross the finish line, the initial driver can use that win to make the chase. I had no idea that was in the rules. I've never heard it talked about.
I didn't know about that. I didn't know they actually had that rule. This situation, I think it was last year, I had a question about, and I was actually on the phone with, who was it from NASCAR Radio, XM? It was Chocolate and, what's his name?
Chocolate and Jim. Jim Noble. Been on the show before.
Noble, yes. Anyway, I was on the phone with them because it was Denny Hamlin at Bristol, if you remember. Denny got out, Eric Jones got in. And I posed the question to them, this very same scenario, if Eric Jones had won, would Denny Hamlin get the win? And both of them agreed with me that he shouldn't because he didn't do it. If you want to get him winning points, sure, that, you know, that's where the car finished, fine. But the win, you know, the win in your in part, I don't agree with. I'll even go a step further because I said this at the beginning of the year when we found out Tony Stewart would be out, because this was not an in-race injury or due to anything to do with this sport. I don't think he should get a medical waiver in. I know, you know, it's his last year, and I feel really bad about that. But to me, it's just not – it's not the same as Kyle Busch last year, not even on the same page.
No, because when Kyle won last year, he dominated races that he won. Or he closed out the race. I mean, he picked up that first win at Sonoma last year. So to come back from his injury with a broken leg and do it at the road course, that is chase qualifying material. Parking the car or getting out of the car halfway is not.
No, not even that. Yes, Kyle is the one that got all of those checkered flags, and he's the one that got himself into the top 30. But he injured himself in a race that NASCAR ran in the Xfinity at Daytona before he even got the Run A Cup race.
Right.
Tony injured his back in a sand rail before Daytona even happened. So, yeah, that's where my standpoint on all of this is I am actually against Tony being in the chase or being chase eligible. And I don't want to be ripping him a new one. I know it's his last year and everything, but that just to me is not the same. It's not fair. I don't think they would do the same for A.J. Allmendinger or Ringer Greed Sorensen or any of those. That seems really unfair to me.
I agree.
So
there's something to it. And I think this medical waiver, I think this has opened up a can of worms because basically you're saying, look, you can get injured at the racetrack. You can get injured away from the racetrack. We're still going to let you take a shot at the race because if it goes on and Tony makes a chase, he qualifies for those final four. And here's a couple things. And I found that information in regards to Milwaukee that I was talking about. It was in 2007. Eric Almirola was credited with the victory. He took he started the car. He had to get out after Denny Hamlin arrived because his helicopter couldn't land. So Almirola started, but Hamlin got the win. And I don't think that's fair. And here's the other thing. And this goes to the championship. NASCAR has no written rule on relief drivers and the chase. The only exception to that is that the driver changes are not permitted by the final four championship eligible drivers. So NASCAR has left this wide open to interpretation on how they want to say who can get in, who can't. And I think you're absolutely right on saying a driver like maybe A.J. Allmendinger or Reed Sorensen or a backmarker, they're not going to make it. But is this something to say, okay, it's Stewart's last year, let's give him a little bit of a leeway? I don't know. I would hope not, because, again, this goes to the credibility and the integrity of the sport. So I don't know where this leaves us, but Stewart's definitely getting out of the car this week. He's only going to run, like I said, to the first caution or the first pit stop, get out. Ty Dillon's going to take over. Who's going to get the credit for the win? It'll obviously be Tony Stewart if Ty Dillon goes. But again, I don't think Ty Dillon, I mean, every race that he's run so far in that 14 car has not been very good. The best results came in with Brian Vickers, who was filling in. So I wouldn't expect to see Ty Dillon in victory lane. And if it does, I'll eat my hat next Wednesday right here on the air. And I like this hat. So, excuse me. Anyways, going back to Indianapolis here for a minute. We do have some audio from Carl Edwards. He was talking about testing this week at the Brickyard.
There's a lot of stuff to learn here. This track is it's difficult for a number of reasons, but really for me, you know, just the weather today versus yesterday. It's hard to determine how much of it is the weather, how much of it is, you know, when the sun comes out, the track changes. As the Goodyear rubber lays down, it changes. But so what the challenge for us is as we make these changes with the car, to try to separate the track changes and the temperature changes from the actual changes to the car. So it's a pretty difficult place to to test and to figure things out. But that kind of makes it fun. I mean, we've got my crew chief and team of engineers over there, and I mean, they are going through every. I mean, they're really over there thinking and working hard, and those kind of challenges are fun.
So you got a lot of challenges that are going on out there for drivers that are testing, and as we mentioned, the weather issue. But I've heard two drivers, both at testing, and both said they were having fun. When does that ever happen?
I'm telling you, dude, it's this package. The way it puts it into the driver's hands, they can do what they want. They can sneak up on people like they couldn't with the high drag, high downforce. I loved this package from the moment they were started talking about it. And it just, yeah, I think we're seeing the result now. And if NASCAR ever touches it, I swear I'm never going to forgive them.
I don't think you're the only one. I think there's a lot of people that would be upset with this because I think we are finally getting a handle on it. Remember back during the postseason, it was like, well, what are we going to get out of this aero package? It definitely showed promise at Kentucky and Darlington last year. And I think it's living up to that hype. And the more that we develop, I think we're going to get better. I hope that's the case. But Indianapolis should be fun. I'm definitely looking forward to that one with this package. There were a lot of people that said last year they wish they would have run Indianapolis as one of the test races with this aero package. They did not. It was considered. But I think we may see something special in Indianapolis. I hope, because after the Brickyard last year, I said it's time to eliminate the Brickyard 400 off the schedule. As big as a race that is, it's not a good race. It's an event, and that's all there is to it. So it's going to take something extra special for me to get back on the bandwagon. And I love Indianapolis. I love the 500. I love the pageantry around that racetrack, and I love the history around it. But the racing for Sprint Cup Series is not good there.
Well, and here's where I'm hopeful, because you remember last year at, I think it was Michigan and Indianapolis, they ran basically the opposite of what we have now. They ran a high drag, high downforce, where we had a low drag, low downforce now. So, yeah, I'm really kind of hoping for the exact opposite.
Well, we can only wait and see once we get there in July, I believe it is. Another hot day in Indianapolis, nothing wrong with that. Hopefully the racing's just as hot as the temperature. Speaking of racetracks, some news out of Chicago. They have themselves a new entitlement sponsor, and Nickelodeon steps back up to the fray. Remember last year, Nickelodeon headed to Kansas Speedway and brought SpongeBob, Patrick, and the crew from under the sea for the SpongeBob SquarePants 400. This year, it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Nickelodeon is going to sponsor the race. It's going to be called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 400. Why not? All four turtles going to be hanging around. Danica Patrick has signed on to drive a special car that's going to have the turtles on that for this race weekend. She said growing up, she was actually a big fan of the turtles. It was not something typical for little girls to enjoy, but she loved the turtles and looks forward to having them on the car. Now, hopefully she can keep the sheet metal straight, because nobody wants a crunched up turtle. More comments from the peanut gallery. But so there's been some question on this, and I've seen some people talk. They're like, why is Nickelodeon doing this? It's not drawing fans. Bogus. Last year's Kansas race had the most kids attending that race in the history of NASCAR. There were more kids under the age of 16 that attended that race and were enjoying the SpongeBob SquarePants 400 because it was relatable. It is much more relatable than some of these tech companies that are putting big money on entitlement sponsors.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we think of the Budweiser. Well, it's not the Budweiser shootout anymore, but when it was, you know, that was a more adulterated, you know, event. When you bring Nickelodeon or you know, SpongeBob, stuff like that, it makes it more family oriented, which really is kind of, in my mind, the step NASCAR has been trying to go into for a while now. So, yeah, it does make
And I see nothing wrong with that. If you bring in something, everybody's like, oh, well, these sponsors are boring. It's just you're putting a name on it. Nobody recognizes half of these names. Well, that's true. So put something that people recognize. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have been around for 26 years. No, 28 years. So it's a majority of people, whether you're old or young, you relate to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I think this is something great for Chicagoland. They're going to kick off the chase with something special. It's an opportunity to bring more families in. And like you said, it's not just for the adults. So maybe mom and dad go to the race and they take their kid with them just because, hey, maybe we can get a picture with the Ninja Turtles. My son, I could tell you right now, he would be through the roof. He wouldn't care about the race cars. Yeah, he'd be like, all right, he'd be wearing his Kyle Busch shirt. Yes, my son is a Kyle Busch shirt, a fan. It kind of pushed my buttons when I first found that out. But, hey, I like Kyle. But
like him now.
Yeah, it's okay. It works for me now. But he would go there and he'd be like, oh, the Ninja Turtles. And that's what all the kids are. And so you get them into the stands and maybe they start to understand a little bit more of the race. They start to understand the cars. And remember, racing is not just about the race cars. There's so much technology, and they use this for educational purposes. There's a lot of NASCAR things that go into schools. They use for training. They use for math. They use for education. So if you bring a kid to the racetrack because of the Ninja Turtles, and all of a sudden he starts to pick up on a driver, he wants to know more about the car, how things work. Educated a child because of one step-down effect. You start with the Turtles, you end up down here, and the next thing you know, he's growing up to be an engineer. How can that possibly be a bad thing? So it's just, again, I think people just are not thinking about the long-term of effects of what a sponsor does. Just like the Budweiser shootout. So you mentioned anything is sponsored by Budweiser. It has a trickle-down effect. You go to the race, you get a beer, you get drunk, you fall down those said steps. Everything's got a trickle-down effect. It's just more pleasant when you're talking about the kids going and hanging out with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So we got a few more minutes left. Obviously, we've got to get into to Talladega. And something I was looking at, anytime we go to Talladega and Daytona, one of the first things everybody talks about is the big one. We know it's a possibility. But do you realize in the last three spring races, we have not had a big one? We have not had one that's involved more than five cars.
Yeah, and that actually kind of surprises me. I mean, I don't know if that's because of the new car that we do have or people are just being more patient, which is almost never going to happen. But, yeah, wow. That does widen it. I think it helps everybody's chances to actually make it to the end, though.
Right, and I think I'm missing something because I can't remember if it was a fall race or I think it was a fall race that we had the big one at the checkered flag. But anyways, there's been fewer cars torn up at Talladega since we got away from that two-car tandem. The two-car tandem started it. We had fewer major wrecks with that two-car tandem, but we've got into the packs, and we've actually had fewer big ones since we've got into this pack racing, which has blown me away. Because I was so against bringing the pack back. I love the two-car tandem. Obviously, we're not going to see that again. But these guys have managed to figure out how to keep things separated and just ride. And they're able to ride in the pack. Now, we start to see a little bit during the spring race, maybe because it's warmer. I don't know. But we see more of that single file up against the wall in the spring than we do in the fall. So hopefully that's not a trend because I think that's something that just kills Talladega when you start to get that single file because you cannot pass. The bottom of the racetrack at Talladega is not the way around if you want to pass, especially if there's a line forming up against the wall. So I don't know. Will we see the big one? I don't think so. And I think that is going to change how drivers have to race this because more cars are finishing at Talladega than ever before.
I'm gonna kind of disagree with you on one thing, because we have seen people be able to pass when they are right up against the wall. I think it kind of depends on how well your car is handling. One of them is gonna be my picks for this. Let's take them, which we're gonna have an argument. But that statistic, and I guess it doesn't factor in as much to me as I guess it probably should. But either way, I love the Talladega race. Yeah, sometimes it's long and boring, and there's not many cautions, but those last five laps are always amazing.
Yeah, no kidding, especially if we get a green-white checkered finish. Then things get really intense. One quick thing, did you see that Trevor Bayne's car has been announced for Darlington's throwback weekend? What have you thought about that car?
I unfortunately have not yet seen that one, so enlighten me, sir.
Mark Martin's early 1990s Valvoline scheme.
Okay, and that one actually would make sense. The one I wish they would bring back, honestly, is this Valvoline scheme, but it was that painted, like, paint drops were all along the sides and everything. That was
yes.
My favorite Valvoline of all time.
I think that was the 2000 Valvoline paint scheme. I remember that because that came out with the Bubble Ford that I like I used to call it. They had those oval headlights, and the entire car basically just looked like a bubble. And I'm pretty sure that was 2000 when Ford came out with their new car. So yeah, I definitely like that one. That was kind of cool. NASCAR made an announcement yesterday. They have made some changes down at Daytona. Joey Chitwood, former president of Daytona International Speedway, has now become the chief executive officer of ISC. So a big move for Joey. He's done a great job down at Daytona, was able to get that track through their changes of the Daytona Rising. And has just made Daytona an event. People like to go to Daytona, whether it's in February or whether it's in July. So Joey Chitwood did a great job, and I'm sure he will do a tremendous job with ISC. And I would expect to see some changes around that company with Joey Chitwood sitting at the top of that. So a couple minutes left. We've actually got a little bit of time to debate our picks, about 2.5 minutes. So not a lot of time. Who was your pick from last weekend? I have lost my paper.
I was Kasey Kane, which we all thought was a complete wild card. You, sir, I believe, had Kurt Busch.
You are absolutely right, I did. And I was just, like, crying in my Busch beer. Not really. I didn't have one. But anyways, that final restart, I was thinking, I was like, all right, I've got it. Caution. Where's Kurt going? Yeah, straight backwards. That did not work out well for either of us. But like you texted me halfway through the race, Kurt and Kasey were literally nose to tail, I think, for like 100 laps.
Yeah, it was definitely going to be a close one. I think I edged you out just a little bit. But either way, that was still a pretty close race we had.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find my results here. I just closed down my page. But anyways, we'll move on to Talladega. And this is truly you take 40 names, you stick them in a blender, whichever one shoots out the top, that is who you've got. So 90 seconds, we've got, who is your pick for Talladega?
I know this is the mix of a blender, but this place always seems to have a Pied Piper, which is why I have to go with him, the number 88, Dale Jr. The one guy I'm surprised has not won yet. I know I've been saying Joey Logano, but Dale Jr. has been there for at least two or three times this year and still just not been able to pull it off.
Well, I'm going with a first-time winner this weekend. And we've seen him before at Talladega. We've seen surprises at Talladega. And there should be no reason this guy cannot end up in victory lane. He breaks the rookie streak. Ryan Blaney. The Wood Brothers in victory lane at Talladega.
And that would be the first rookie to get a win in how many years?
Quite a while. Tony Stewart would have been the last one. No, I'm wrong. Jimmy Johnson would have been the last one.
No,
so
right.
we've got the Pied Piper and we've got the rookie Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Ryan Blaney for the wins this weekend at Talladega. Mike, another great show. A lot of good insight. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we will find out who reigns supreme in the fantasy next Wednesday night when we see you right back here at 8 o'clock for Race Talk Live.
Looking forward to it. See you then.
See ya. Have a good night, everybody.